This week, the upcoming Halloween film's ending is proving to be more of a trick than a treat. The house that Jack built is stirring up controversy at Cannes. The sci-fi television take on Tremors has been scrapped. There's a new Stephen King book on the horizon. And a beloved horror comedy might just be getting a sequel in 2019. We continue our Comedy of Terrors month by proving we ain't afraid of no ghosts with this week's main event, Ghostbusters. So avoid the ectoplasm and ready your proton packs, because we're definitely crossing streams. Welcome to another episode of Terror Incognito.
Listen to them, children of the night. What music they make.
Yeah. That feels appropriate for this week.
Does it? Hey, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to episode 33. Another piece of Alex died inside. And
I thought it was 34.
No, this is
33.
Oh. This is 33. In all this time, in 33 weeks of recording, we've only missed 1 week. Can you believe that?
No. I take this shit very seriously, okay?
We've missed 1 week in all of this time. That's pretty crazy. My name is Palmer, and as always, I'm joined by my friends Alex.
Hello.
Hi, Sam. Friends.
Hi, friends.
How are you guys doing? What's new with you guys
Groovy.
This week? Groovy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what was with the growl?
Oh, I don't know. Are
you practicing your death metal vocals?
I didn't realize that we were recording.
Are you trying out for a death metal band?
No.
Why not? You sound like you could.
No, I'm going to join Kanye's crew. Scoopity poop poop.
Is Kanye big on the death metal growls now? He's moved from trap and into death metal.
Yeah. Scoopity scoop poop.
Yeah. That's what we spent like the last like hour almost watching like vines and random shit on YouTube to get ourselves hype for this cast.
That's what the internet is for.
Yeah.
As we were sitting around eating Chipotle and just losing ourselves in internet memes.
Sounds like a pretty standard Thursday night.
Yeah, that's true. I guess we do that pretty often now these days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We don't even really like, we just like sit around and eat. And Alex will turn something on. We'll just be like, what the hell are you watching?
And 2 hours later, we decide to start recording the podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't have it any other way, to be honest.
It's podcast time and it's friend time.
Yeah. We're just sharing smiles and laughs.
And occasional growls.
Yeah.
And occasional death metal vocals.
It felt right.
Yeah. Well, we don't have too much to cover on the horror headlines list this week, so why don't we jump on in?
Let's do it.
Horror headlines. Well, kicking it off for this week, we've got some confirmations that the Halloween ending is being reshot. The upcoming film is getting its ending reshot or maybe just shot, from what I understand.
Yeah.
So it seems like director Gordon Green is getting back in the director's chair to take another stab at the film's ending. And it was apparently rated pretty poorly during a test screening.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that test screening was real.
Yeah, that John Carpenter came out and was like, there's been no test screenings. What are you talking about?
You fucking liar.
Yeah, fucking. Well, we know what John Carpenter is now.
The dirty liar who lies.
He sits on the throne of lies.
We don't really know a whole lot of other, like, concrete details aside from that, but there's some speculation, and you're gonna have to take all of this with a grain of salt because it's all rumors and hearsay. But the comments on the Bloody Disgusting article claim that the ending isn't being reshot, rather it's just being shot. So apparently the consensus from people that attended the screening and leaked, mm-hmm, I guess broke the NDA and talked about it afterwards, was that people weren't upset with the way it ends, or with like, I guess, the content of the ending. They felt it ended too soon.
Too soon, yeah.
Apparently, they were right on the cusp of answering something.
Right.
That a lot of fans of the series have wanted to know for a while. The people that were talking about it were not too keen on giving out any other details aside from that.
No.
So I don't know. What do you, as the resident Halloween fan, do you have any ideas as to what this could be possibly trying to answer?
No, I thought about it, and I've had to try really hard not to read the spoilers.
Oh, did you find them?
I think I found them, but I had to close it because I so much want to read them, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, don't do that to yourself.
I don't even want to watch the trailer.
You should send me the link so I can read it.
And me.
But no, I thought about it, and then I don't know. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
I do think it's important to note that it's still on track to be released at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the good thing that's coming out of this. But yeah, I have to embrace my Halloween ignorance here and say that I really have no idea what it could possibly be trying to answer.
No.
I'd imagine it's got something to do with Laurie Strode's relationship to Michael, but
I hope not, though.
They're scrapping Halloween 2 also,
which
so
is
that,
awesome.
That wouldn't be...
No.
Part of the canon anymore.
It
so
wouldn't.
I guess they wouldn't be related.
No.
So I don't know. It's a big cloud of mystery.
Yeah.
Here's to keeping our fingers crossed that they're gonna keep their promises about this not pushing back the release date.
I hope so.
We'll see what happens with it. Next up, Lars von Trier's latest film, The House That Jack Built, finds itself drenched in controversy. I don't think...
No.
We all talked about this, like, in depth.
A couple of times.
And I don't think any of us are surprised by this. But it premiered at Cannes, and like many of his films, it's been met pretty divisively.
Mm-hmm.
People have either walked away from this saying it's another fucking genius piece of work that he's done, or that it's trash.
They called it vile.
Yeah,
or they just walked out.
Torturous.
I've got apparently over half the audience left. It's estimated that at least 100 people walked out of the movie before it was even over. Like within the first like 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So tweets about the film's reception started circulating, and I've got some highlights here. Gross, pretentious, vomitive, torturous, pathetic. One of my other favorites. Why can't Lars von Trier just make a normal fucking movie for once?
I mean, he was banned from Cannes for like 6 years.
Yeah.
I don't understand why anyone is so fucking surprised. But what they don't mention in this article is that there were the people who did stick around until the end, that he had like a six or seven minute standing ovation. That people are like, okay.
Apparently, like even some of the reviews that I read for it were like, the movie is atrocious. I really didn't like it, but the ending was perfect.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
None of the things that people are upset about, one, do I think they should be surprised about being a Lars von Trier film, and two, being a Lars von Trier film about a serial killer. Like,
yeah.
I don't understand why anybody is surprised.
It just sounds like he's made a movie about a serial killer that accurately portrays what a serial killer is.
Yes. I mean... Did you watch the trailer?
I did, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it looks
fine.
Yeah.
It looks good.
Yeah. It looks like another Lars von Trier film.
There's a lot of, like, cuts, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It looks a little pretentious, but I feel like that's just kind of his thing.
But I found a standout line in a review that I read, and you're going to bear with me here, because I'm going to read this entire thing, because it's fucking flawless.
Okay.
This tawdry, nasty little movie is destined to immediately attain cult status as a dog whistle for the particular brand of film bro who will wear it as a badge of honor that they somehow get it in a way that snowflake critics such as myself simply do not. The irony in the smallest comforts in the dark days of hot takes to come. But there is one thing that the house Jack built proves beyond all doubt. It's that as much as von Trier has contempt for all the above-mentioned segments of society, there are no people on the earth he despises more than those who would make themselves his accomplices.
Is that from a, like, the Paste review?
No. It was from, like, a more, like, small time.
Oh, yeah, because I feel like there was this woman, I forget her name, she wrote, like, a biting review.
Yeah, this one was pretty biting,
I was like,
too.
Damn.
So are you gonna be said film bro?
Probably.
Maybe, I don't know, I'm not gonna pretend I get his movies, I just watch them. Like, Nymphomaniac, I don't understand what the purpose of that was, but I watched it.
I don't know, I thought you were supposed to be the one all that highbrow.
Yeah.
Sure.
Is it too highbrow?
Maybe.
It's too highbrow.
Maybe.
If you push those glasses up your nose any further, they're going to go straight into your brain.
Yeah, exactly. That's the goal. But regardless, all this is just making me more sold on this.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to see it, and now
I need to see it. This is on the heels of the people freaking out and, like, losing their shit over the Suspiria viewing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's two upcoming
movies. Get fucking hyped, man.
Yeah. two upcoming movies that are pretty shocking.
People are too fucking
sensitive. Maybe that's what it is, but some of the gruesome details that we've gotten out of this, and spoilers are here, so skip like 45 seconds if you don't want to hear them, but a woman's breast is cut off, an excruciating detail, apparently. The child version of Jack clips the leg off a duckling and then puts it in the pond and watches it writhe around, and a family is shot by a high-powered rifle, and apparently, on a few different things that I've read, that the scene is kind of done in excruciating details, supposed to mimic the JFK assassination.
Okay.
Back and to the left.
But yeah, what did people expect? I don't know.
Understand.
If anything, he's probably riding this hype wave now because he's like, he's feeling more and more justified by all this bad press.
Yep. I loved it. I thought the trailer was great.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited to see it. I definitely am going to watch it. And if I can't make it through, then I can't make it through. I don't know. I feel like that duckling scene, I'm probably going to have to
turn it off. It's not real.
I know, but it still bothers me.
I saw somebody, one of the comments, I think, on the Bloody Disgusting article or whatever it was, somebody was asking whether or not a Serbian film had met its match.
I saw that. I doubt it.
Which really makes me wonder.
That
like,
doesn't bother me. It's like the violence against animals, even if it's fictitious. Yeah, I don't know. I just can't do it. Fuck children. I don't give a shit about them.
the little ducklings.
Not the duckling. Not the ducklings. The poor duckling, man.
It's only one leg.
Do the duckling. Well, never mind. It's fake. It's all fake.
It's not real.
The PETA in me is screaming.
Oh my goodness.
Screaming that it's wasting food.
Meat is murder.
Ducks are delicious. Don't fuck with my food source.
You don't eat their legs, though.
You could, maybe.
No, you don't.
Duck legs?
No. You don't eat.
Like
duck feet?
You're talking like the feet, like the part that doesn't have like.
Yeah, the part that he cut off.
Yeah.
You don't eat that.
I don't know. People eat chicken feet. I'm surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if people eat duck feet.
Yeah.
You're right.
I'm just throwing that out there.
I don't like to eat feet.
Me either. I'm with you. I think it's a little much for me. That's where I draw the line.
People do.
Yeah. I don't know.
Especially here in the South.
You're right. Pig's feet.
Pig's feet.
Chicken's feet. Frog legs.
Frog legs.
But moving right along.
Well, I want to talk about chicken feet more. Fine.
Tremors had a show that was going to air on a little channel called Sci-Fi. And a trailer surfaced. And apparently there was a pretty good pilot shot.
Yeah.
And Sci-Fi just promptly said, hey, we got something good here. Let's cancel it.
Yeah, Sci-Fi shit the fucking bed.
Bunch of fucking idiots. Like, whoever made that decision is going to be like...
That trailer looked incredible.
It did.
And Kevin Bacon's been crushing it on TV for like the last 5 years.
Yeah, he had what? He was in The Following?
The Following.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
That was amazing. Yeah, the first couple seasons were really good.
So yeah, he leads this... Or it seems like he led this Tremors TV show. But none of it matters because it's not going to see the light of day now.
I hope somebody picks it up.
But the 3-minute-long trailer... Well, actually, I was going to ask you guys, do you think somebody will? But
Netflix.
maybe. Or Amazon. Or
I think... Doesn't Netflix have Shutter? All the Tremors on there right now?
I don't know. Do they?
I think so.
Oh. Well. I don't think I've ever seen more than the first one.
I have.
I've
seen the first two.
I have the box set on DVD.
I was going to say, you have the box.
My sister got it
for me. Yeah, you're the resident Tremors fan.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Don't. Just like Alex is the resident Halloween fan, you're the resident Tremors.
If you want to watch, and like the first one's amazing, the second one's fine.
Uh-huh.
If you watch the third one, you've pretty much seen 4 and 5, so you're good. You can stop there.
I've only seen the first two.
But yeah, what are your thoughts on this, Sam, considering the trailer and everything? And
so the graboid looks weird.
Yeah, it did look a little bizarre. Weird. But I think it's just supposed to be like a new take on them, right? Or the fact that they've been gone for so long.
Yeah.
So this is a new evolution of it.
It definitely looked weird. It definitely looked like they got rid of the whole practical effects that kind of made them great in like the original Tremors. True. Like it was obviously CGI. But I love the idea of like a 20 plus year later drunk Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Kind of like,
I was right.
Like that's
weird hero complex.
That's fucking great.
Yeah.
And it definitely kind of on the heels of seeing Ash vs. Evil Dead get canned.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we were at that right moment for something else to kind of step into those like 20 years later.
And I wonder how much Ash vs. Evil Dead's ratings might have had an effect on this decision.
That probably could have spooked them, but again, that was on Stars.
Yeah,
yeah, it's true.
Nobody like, has.
I feel like Stars. Sci-Fi was the perfect channel for this because they're taking all these big risks. Like Happy crushed it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like, I guess it did do a lot better than they projected.
It did a lot better than they projected, because originally it was supposed to just be a one-season run.
Yeah.
And, like, it was violent, there was all sorts of cursing, all sorts of shit in that show. So I feel like Sci-Fi would have been the perfect channel for something like this.
Yep.
And I'm really surprised that they canceled it.
They didn't even start it.
Yeah, well, yeah.
No, they shot the pilot.
They shot the pilot. Done. Like, the pilot's done, but no one's ever going to fucking see it unless somebody else picks it up.
There's chances that pilots surface. That happens every once in a while. Somebody throws it on Vimeo or something.
Just judging by the trailer, I'm going to be surprised if this doesn't get picked up somewhere.
Yeah. You really think it's going to?
I think it's going to. I think it'll get picked up somewhere.
I hope so. It looks like I would tune in and check it out. I'd give it a shot and see how it went. I have to admit that it's a. I like the first one, but not enough to watch like any of the rest of the franchise.
But that's fine, because like,
I would rewatch the first one, though.
Yeah. Which is fine, because this show is kind of like retconning the rest of the franchise, and it's mostly just Kevin Bacon's story.
Just continuing on his character.
Yeah, which after the first one kind of falls by the wayside.
Yeah.
Kevin Bacon.
Tastes like Kevin Bacon. But yeah, we'll see what happens with it. It seems interesting. Really, I just put it in here because I know you're a Tremors fan.
I'm a huge Tremors fan.
Good job, Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
Bunch of fucks.
They got all this fucking like good cred from me for Happy, and then they just fucking flushed it right down the goddamn toilet.
I still have not finished Happy. I need to finish Happy. New Stephen King books on the horizon.
Yes.
Called The Outsider, not to be confused with the beloved classic that I only recently found out was a movie.
You've seen that.
Yeah, I've seen it. And I actually got really confused when I first clicked on the link to look at this, because I was like, Stephen King's writing a book about The Outsider.
Sorry, Dan. I cannot believe you haven't seen that movie.
I've read that book dozens of times, but I've never seen the movie.
You have to watch
it. I think
it.
Like that and like Matilda are probably the two books that I've read the most in my entire fucking life, like, because I just reread them over and over as a kid. Yeah.
The Outsiders also has Matt Dillon in it.
There's
Patrick Swayze's ghost. Fucking hates you,
fucking Patrick Swayze. Anyways, the synopsis is that an 11-year-old's an 11-year-old boy's violated corpse. That is a hard sentence for me to read for some reason. Is found in a town park. Eyewitnesses and fingerprints unmistakably point to one of Flint City's most popular citizens. Apparently, he has an alibi, but there's a whole bunch of DNA evidence and fingerprints and witnesses and. Seems like there might be more to the case than people initially thought.
But he's a Little League coach.
Right?
And a father of two girls.
And an English teacher. He could never be a murderer.
But this sounds more like a murder mystery, not really what Stephen King is known for writing.
Yeah.
It seemed a little bit.
But knowing King, he'll probably figure out some way to cram some sort of supernatural hullabaloo in there or something.
Absolutely.
I had never realized
until right now that they did book trailers.
I was going to ask.
Right?
Have you guys ever seen one before? Because this is the first time I've ever
I've never seen one before, but I looked, and apparently they've been doing them for quite a while.
Really?
Yes. Which is
what other books have they done?
Are they all like usually animated, or did they ever have live
action Sometimes they have
ones?
Real people like, in them, which I think is very strange.
Are they for like these like syndicated writers that are like pumping up books after book?
I didn't recognize all the names, but I assume yes.
Like, I could see it for like Dan Brown.
Yeah.
But just grab Tom
Cussler novels.
Just, like, with Dan Brown, just grab Tom Hanks and give him like a 30-second spot. Be like, the movie's going to come out in 2 years anyway.
Here's $250,000.
Yeah.
Consider this your tryout, your audition.
But yeah, apparently it's a thing.
Huh. Yeah, yeah. This is the first one that I've encountered. So.
Yeah. I mean, the trailers for this were cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to admit, the book sounds interesting.
It does. I like ones that don't have real people in them. Because I feel like half the thing about a book is being able to picture your own character. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of shitty when they're like, this is what the character looks like. You're like, no, fuck that.
Yeah.
I'll probably
pick this up. It's been a long time since I've actually sat down and read a Stephen King book.
The last new one that I read by him was Love in 2263, and that turned out to be pretty damn good. So
his most recent book is, what was it called? Something Beauties. Sleeping Beauties.
Oh, yeah, that's the one he wrote with his son, right?
That came out in 2017. I didn't read it.
I'm a sucker for a good, like, mystery kind of book.
You should get it at Barnes & Noble. It's only 90 cents more than it is on Amazon. Because you gotta keep bookstores alive.
Oh, okay.
But Amazon is a book retailer?
No, get it from Barnes & Noble. It's much better.
Which one is... Barnes and Noble's e-reader book thing?
Oh, the Nook or whatever?
Is that what theirs is?
I don't have to interact with anybody if I buy it from Amazon. No.
Technically, you can go online and buy from Barnes and Noble.
Go online and buy it, and then just go pick it up. You don't have to talk to anybody.
You do, though, because I got to go up to the counter and be like, my book.
My book.
Hand them your ID. You don't even have to say anything.
I can just keep... I'm gonna record that online as a Vine.
Yes, but then it's not for free.
I'm gonna record that as a Vine, me just going up dead silent.
Just idea.
They just look at me funny. I'm
just like, you can pre-order.
Write a note. I was told all I needed to do was show you my
idea. You can buy it for $18.
Just play this episode.
Go to Barnes & Noble. It's killing the book industry.
Whatever.
Amazon's killing every industry.
I know.
Amazon is just slaughtering
the
everybody.
Old guy at
Did Pine- you ever get your chair?
No.
What? Amazon, you done fucked up.
The old guy this at Barnes why, & Noble was so sweet, though.
This is why Alex is now recommending...
Barnes & Noble because of the old guy?
No, she's recommending brick and mortar stores because Amazon didn't deliver her chair.
I was so fucking excited about that chair.
So what's happening with that chair?
I don't know.
Are you just not getting it?
I had to reorder it, and then they said they were going to ship it for free, which was already free because I have Amazon Prime. Right. And then they sent me an email like a couple days ago saying that it was delayed shipping. So, I don't know.
Check back next week, fans, for a chair watch part 3.
Chair update.
I feel like it's really going to tie the room together. I even got a pillow for it.
Did the pillow show up
yet? Yes, the pillow came like last week.
So, yeah, this has a release date. It's right around the corner. The Stephen King book. It's next week, right?
The 22nd.
Yeah. So, it'll be right around the corner if you want to pick it up.
576 pages of...
Of pure Stephen King goodness.
Pure Stephen King goodness. Get it on Barnes & Noble.
Written by Sissy Spacek.
Starring Sissy Spacek.
Next up, we're getting the first details for Universal's Halloween Horror Nights. This is an event I attended last year. I had a lot of fun going to. And as a result, I just, I want to talk about this year. I don't, there was a little bit where we were considering going again in October because my wife's parents are Disney nuts. And so I was like, well, if I'm going to be down there, I'm going to go to it again this year. But I don't think that's going to happen. I just don't have the time off.
Because they have really cheap flights from Richmond.
Yeah, I know they do. It's not bad at all.
We could go for, like, the day.
We could go for a weekend. I'd be down.
Yeah.
Like, 100% down for going for a weekend.
Yeah.
We could do the whole thing. I did it in one night. It's exhausting, but it's doable.
We could absolutely.
It's 100% doable.
We could literally just go for the night.
I'm down. I'm totally down. You think I'm joking.
No, I'm not.
I'm 100%.
I looked at flights.
I am 100% on board for that.
I have nothing to do with this madness.
You don't want to come? You don't want to take one?
We'll see. I'm supposed to be down in Florida like the month before.
It starts in September, Sam.
Well, that would actually be the right time. You guys, in that case.
Can we come stay with you?
Yeah.
Where are you staying in Florida, though?
Is it in Orlando?
It's probably in Miami.
Yeah, it's near Miami.
Oh, it's too far away.
Garbage.
That's a hike, bud.
That's a whole plane ride. Fine, Palmer and I will go then.
Anyways, so Trick or Treat.
Trick or Treat
is it's Michael Daughtry's contemporary cult hit. It's getting a maze event. It's the first thing that they're announcing. The teaser that was released with it showed people going through some tight corridors designed to look like Krieg's house, the character from two of the short stories in the anthology. I guess description of the event was said, guests will experience some of the film's most grisly scenes and encounter hauntingly familiar characters. They will meander through Mr. Krieg's infamous house and watch as college students viciously transform into bloodthirsty werewolves and dismember the town, as well as come face to face with Sam, the spirit of Halloween, who readies to punish those who break the holidays tradition. Have you guys ever seen this anthology film?
I
have.
Yeah. We watched it last year for... I mean, I've seen it before, but didn't we watch it last year?
No, we didn't. It wasn't one that we covered.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it several times.
You haven't seen it? You'd enjoy the hell out of this one. You'd love that movie.
Punish!
No other details to share as of right now, but it has me wondering, does this mean that we might actually get a part two to Trick or Treat sometime soon?
Ooh, maybe.
Wait a minute. Is that what it is? The Punish one?
No, that's a Christmas movie.
That's what I was going to say. I was like,
that's Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Yeah. I was like, I know that.
Punish! No, just whenever someone says Punish, I have to.
Okay. It's like a learned reaction at this
point. I've never been to Universal's Horror Nights, obviously, but I was looking at some of the other mazes that they have.
Mm.
They have some, I mean, it looks like they have some really fucking cool ones.
They do. They're not bad. They're definitely a lot better than, like, King's Dominion or, like, Six Flags.
I thought King's Dominion was okay.
Yeah, well, like, the last time I was there, I was
kind of disappointed. We can't all go to Disneyland.
The last time I was there, I was a little disappointed.
Nobody wants to scare you.
That's the problem, but Universal Studios, they don't give a fuck, yeah. Dude.
That's their job.
Yeah.
It's their job at King's Dominion.
No. King's Dominion is, like, Paramount, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Paramount.
Well, it used to be. I don't think it's still
the
same.
Nobody wants to scare Palmer because he's too tall.
I'm too big. Like, in general, I walk by people and people just stop. And I'm just like, no, you're supposed to spook me.
The only person that scared him last year was this tiny little girl
with an axe. And she did so well, dude. She got me. She got me.
It was amazing. She got me.
I jumped a little bit. I looked back at her and I was like, you. Yeah. So, where is your manager, madam? Because I'm giving you a glowing review.
does Universal have the, like, necesses or whatever that you can wear?
The Nobu.
They do. Kelly
Warner.
Wanted one. I convinced her not to. She went through the whole thing without one.
Good for her.
She walked right behind me the entire time and cowered, but she went through the whole thing without one.
Right.
There you go.
I'm also pretty sure her, like, heart rate spiked to, like, 190 at one point. So she like borderline had a heart attack.
I haven't done like a haunted house kind of thing since I was a kid.
Oh, well, we'll go to King's Dominion. It's fun.
Yeah, King's Dominion is always a blast.
Do you remember last time we got those black hamburgers from Wendy's?
Oh, God. Our shits were green the next day.
They're both green.
Those black Whoppers were fucking awful. I don't know why. It's the same thing as a regular Whopper. It's just black.
Squid ink.
No, they didn't use the squid ink in America. That was a Japan thing.
Wow.
Not in America.
Not in America. They used dye.
Much safer.
Which is why everybody's shits were green. After they ate those fucking burgers.
It was shocking.
But yeah, I wonder if this will help bring Trick or Treat back to the forefront of everybody's minds and push out some demand for a sequel.
How old is that movie? Like, over 10 years?
Yeah, something like that.
I don't know.
I can't believe it's fucking that old, though. It is, though. It really is.
I don't think they're going to do another one.
But Halloween Horror Nights begins on September 14th, so people can go ahead and get their tickets now, actually.
$77.99.
Yep.
For two night.
For two, yeah, it's not bad. It's actually a pretty good deal, considering how much they managed to fucking cram into it. And if you don't do it in one night, I imagine it's a lot more enjoyable. Trying to go through all of it in one fucking night, though, is utterly exhausting.
Yeah, it sounds exhausting.
Next up, there's a 4K restoration of the Candyman film in the works. This is definitely a favorite of Alex
absolutely.
And mine.
Absolutely. You like this one, Sammy?
Hell yeah, Tony Todd for life.
Tony Todd for life!
Oh, show! We covered this movie.
We did.
In pretty...
We
like,
did.
High def, dude. Like, or in depth, I guess, is what I was trying to say. Not high def.
We covered it in 4K.
Yeah, we covered it in 4K, exactly.
That was one of our earlier episodes.
That was one of our earlier. We had a lot of fun researching that
one. We did.
But it's finally getting the remaster. It deserves... it looks like it's also going to be jam-packed with a bunch of special features, some of which were teased by Tony Todd himself on Twitter. So he tweeted out, wait for the new 4K restoration of Candyman with off-screen commentary with the director Bernard J. Rose as well. So...
About fucking time.
Yeah, right? Right?
Right?
Like,
I'm honestly surprised this hasn't happened already.
I know.
Well, I guess beginning of last year is when we started getting all these, like, massive fucking... re-releases of obscure horror movies.
That's true.
And I think a lot of places are taking notice, so
yeah.
It might be just time for us to get a whole bunch of them.
Cool.
In general, which is awesome for me because I'll buy them. Like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I really like these like special packages that they do. Still don't understand why they haven't done one for Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street. I've talked about that before, but fucking package it up already. God damn it.
Package it up.
Come on, New Line and Paramount. Get your shit together. But yeah, we'll be meeting with Tony Todd. Hopefully.
Oh, that scares the care. We're going to meet him.
We're going to make, Alex is going to make sure.
I will make sure. Have you seen me stalk Kathy Bates on Twitter?
So we're either going to meet him or get thrown out of this convention.
Or he's going to be like, you're the lady that's been tweeting me for the past 2 weeks. Yeah. Get out of here.
We're going to show up and there's just going to be a fucking restraining order.
it's just somebody ready to serve you with papers.
Like 500 feet.
But is his autograph on them?
He would have to sign it for it to be valid.
Then there we go.
Doesn't only a judge have to sign it for it to be valid?
Maybe.
I have
Judge
no idea.
Tony Todd.
Will you please sign it, Candyman?
So yeah, assuming we can sit down with him at some point that scares the care, I'll be sure to ask him some more details about this if they haven't emerged before then.
Emerged.
Until then, sit tight until August.
Candyman. We might have some more
details. Yeah, that's coming up.
It is coming up. It's coming up real quick. We need some hotels for that.
Yeah, we're fucked.
Zombieland 2 was getting teased, and it might just feature the entirety of the original cast.
Yeah.
That means Woody Harrelson, Emma Stone, Jesse Eisenberg, and Abigail Breslin might all be returning.
The band's getting gacked together.
The boys are back in town.
The boys. The band's back together.
But yeah, this was confirmed by writers Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick, who worked on Deadpool. And they recently spilled the beans on a bit of awesome information. The info comes from a source, or an interview, rather, that they did with Vulture. They said, we're going on the 10th anniversary of Zombieland. The fucking 10th anniversary.
Right.
Can you believe that everything shit? I feel old as fuck.
Everything is 10.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right. Zombieland came out in October of 2009. We don't know what you get for somebody for their 10th anniversary, but it may just be Zombieland 2. The hope is that we're going to be shooting the thing in early 2019 for an October of 19 release date with the original cast, by the way. We're sitting on some information we can't entirely share at this moment, but we can just say we thank the fans who have been hoping for somebody or for Zombieland 2, and we will grant their wish very, very soon. Sounds like there's going to be some awesome announcements coming our way sooner rather than later, especially if it's like only about like what, a year and 4 months away at this point. So
yeah, I'm very hesitant about this.
Why?
I love the idea of it, and I really would like it to be great.
Yes.
But one, how do you up killing Bill Murray?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. There is no Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be like,
maybe they're gonna kill zombie Bill Murray.
Maybe.
10 years later.
He's just been roaming the Hollywood Bowl by himself.
What if they kill John Cena?
Everybody does love him now.
John,
he is in all the films.
John Cena. But,
no, there was actually...
I'm so sorry. That
sorry about that one.
Sorry.
This is what happens when you mention his name.
Yeah.
They said that the cast, the original cast, is kind of on board to do this.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean anybody signed anything. Do you think they might run into money trouble trying to pay Woody Harrelson and Emma Stone and everybody now?
No. I think they'd do it just fine. I mean, is Woody Harrelson really that in demand right now?
Yeah, maybe like 10 years ago.
No, he's still doing a whole bunch of shit, I thought.
Like, what was the last thing that he was in?
Yeah, what does he do?
Put you on the spot.
Fair enough.
Don't you and take like, it to IMDb. I feel like the most, don't you do that.
I'm not. I was just going to take it to Google.
Emma Stone, I feel like, is the most popular of the bunch.
Yeah, but she's always in movies with
Ryan Gosling.
Yeah. So not maybe they'll kill him.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
I'd pay $10 to see that happen.
So...
What?
I'm just looking at what
he was in last.
Oh, so he was in, I think one of the biggest ones was he was in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
I haven't seen that yet.
He actually is in a ton of shit, you're right.
That one,
yeah, Woody Harrelson hasn't stopped. We only just remember him from the fucking Hunger Games at this point.
He was in the Hunger
Games. He played Lyndon B. Johnson in a 2016 movie.
Really?
Called LBJ, yeah.
And apparently he's sober now.
Oh, like he's not smoking weed?
Yeah.
He'll never top his role as Larry Flint, though. Let's face facts. Let's face facts.
He's not smoking weed anymore?
Yeah, gave that up.
Why?
Who does that?
Why would anybody do that?
People don't make sense to me anymore.
What is the world?
But, yeah, we'll keep people appraised as more details come out. Just thought that was an interesting thing to include.
It is interesting.
Considering this month's theme. And we're ending on a dour note, as seems to be the case like every week for the past.
Like, last week we started on a down note.
And that's true.
This time we're
poorly
turning
organized
around.
On our part.
R.I.P. Margot Kidder.
R.I.P. girl.
People know her from, I guess, in terms of horror movies, Black Christmas, the original one.
Yep.
She was also Lois Lane.
Yep.
And, a bunch of other things.
She had 135 credits on IMDb.
Yep. Yep.
She's Canadian.
She also apparently had some fantastic feet. 4.5 out of 5.
I believe it was like a 4.7 out of 5.
Oh,
it keeps getting better.
Yeah, whatever.
On Wiki Feet.
They were beautiful. Beautifully ranked.
It was beautifully ranked feet.
Apparently. On Wiki Feet. Which I did not know existed up until Alex brought it to my attention. And now I just need to know what everybody's feet are ranked as.
Yep. You do.
But they found her just dead. Seems like she passed away peacefully in her sleep. She died at the age of 69. And as of right now, no foul play is suspected. They are doing a tox screening, right?
They are. Yeah, they said it'd be a couple weeks.
But it'll probably be a while before we hear anything about that. But until then, go out and watch Barb.
Go out and
pound
some vodka for Barb.
She was absolutely unapologetic alcoholic in that movie.
So
and
good.
I fucking
she was
loved
such
it.
A fucking bitch. I loved
she,
it.
We tweeted it out that was like probably our favorite role that she's done.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just, it's rough.
Bummer.
Yeah, losing people that are that iconic. Yeah. But yeah.
With such beautiful feet.
With such beautiful such gorgeous, gorgeous feet. But that wraps it up for this week's horror headlines. Next up is the Now Slang.
So we only got one new flick coming out this week, coming to Netflix.
It's a pretty high profile one, though.
It is. We talked about it before. It's called Cargo.
Cargo!
So it's Martin Freeman. It's a full feature length based off the short that came out a couple years ago. It's currently got, as far as early reviews go, pretty good ratings.
Oh, yeah?
Rotten Tomatoes has it at 83%.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
The short that it was based on was pretty good.
The short was really good. Mm-hmm. I know the big question was kind of how do you... The short seemed perfectly timed and paced. How do you stretch that out into a feature length?
Right.
But for anybody who might be a new listener, maybe missed that one, Andy and Kay have holed up with their one-year-old daughter during a violent pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Kay ends up dying, so Andy goes out on his own with his daughter to try to keep her alive.
Mm-hmm.
But he's infected.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. He's only got 48 hours to find someone else to take care of his daughter, and comes across a Aboriginal tribe, and a young indigenous girl becomes his only chance of safe passage into this sacred community that hates outsiders and also hates infected things.
Yeah.
Because you know they're infected.
Right.
Infected? No!
So yeah, it looks really good.
It does.
Yeah.
The trailer really kind of pulled at my heartstrings.
Yeah, I was literally just about to say those exact words. It looks like the type of film that's going to pull on your heartstrings.
Yeah, definitely. And also be kind of creepy, which I think it looks good.
Yeah, and it just based on the trailer, it feels like it's got a good kind of succession to like the short.
Anybody see that Schwarzenegger movie where he tries to save his daughter Maggie?
Yes.
Did you see that?
Yes.
That's what this reminds me of. Maggie.
So when does this come out then?
This one's coming out to Netflix on the 18th.
Oh, so like
which would
just
be
Friday?
Yeah. Friday. Yep. The day of this episode.
Yep. So the day that you get to listen to this, you can immediately stop the podcast and not listen to the rest of it because it sucks and go and watch Cargo.
There you go. Martin Freeman's in that.
Yeah.
He's famous.
He is famous. How's his feet, though?
Check his rating!
Does Martin Freeman have good feet?
All right.
Well, there you go.
The main event. You guys ready to do this?
Absolutely.
Are you, though?
Bustin' makes me feel good.
Bustin' makes me feel good. Bustin'.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
Is it something strange? Brown and brown in your neighborhood. Brown. No.
Who are you going to call?
My mom.
I was gonna call Bill Murray or Dan Aykroyd.
I guess that works.
Yeah.
I guess.
He wouldn't answer your phone call.
He wouldn't. You're right. He's far too important. Dan Aykroyd, not so much. But Bill Murray definitely would fucking hit
it. I don't know. Bill Murray loves interacting with people.
Yeah, Bill Murray hangs out.
Yeah,
does he?
He'll like find people on like that they're having parties and he'll just like show up.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm gonna get remarried and just invite him to my wedding.
Yeah. No, I think he won't show up if you invite him.
Yeah, he's
You have to have an event that takes place in a city where Bill Murray happens to be.
He's like a reverse vampire. He only comes where he's not invited.
What? I wish the audience could see me shaking my fist angrily at the sky.
Why
have I been cursed with this nonsense? I'm looking at a bunch of notes for a movie we are not talking about this week.
Sorry.
Oh, man. All right. So, everybody's probably seen this film. Ghostbusters movie. It's more than... I'd say it's a definitive classic at this point. I feel like it raised a whole generation of people. But just in case, you were born in, like, 2005... and this movie is far too old for you to be watching. The synopsis is as follows. Three zany doctors, played by Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Harold Ramis.
R.I.P.
Are thrown out of a university that is funding their paranormal research. I wish I could read tonight. That'd be so nice. Coming fresh off the heels of their first confirmed paranormal encounter, the men are convinced they can provide ghost hunting services to the city of New York. Using their last bits of change, they create the Ghostbusters. At first, it seems like a flop, but once they encounter the enchanting Dana Barrett, played by Sigourney Weaver, things start to get truly spooky. They're joined by Janine Melnitz, who's played by Annie Potts, and Winston Zeddemore, who's played by the always wonderful Ernie Hudson.
Mm-hmm. And Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis is in there as Louis Tully. So I feel like that's enough to get us started, to get us to jump into this. I don't think anybody really needs a blow-by-blow on this one.
No, and if you haven't seen it, literally pause it and go watch it.
Yeah. You should do yourself a favor and really just enjoy this film. It's fantastic. So we're going to jump off with the question that we teased on social media, something that we've been bickering about sort of here and there internally, whether or not this is actually a horror comedy. Sam and Alex are entirely in the camp that it isn't, and I stand steadfast as the lone defender that this is certainly a horror comedy.
I don't know if I'd say lone. Other people probably agree with you.
Apparently, this is kind of a hot button issue.
Maybe.
It is.
But I will admit that there are strength in numbers, so I'm going to let you guys
I'm going to let Alex go first, because the more digging I did into this movie, the more I didn't shift into Palmer's camp, but I'm stuck in no man's land right now. So tonight's actually a debate to see which one of the two of you can get me on your side.
Are we trying to sway you?
Yeah. I have my reasons for why it is and for why it isn't.
Typical Sam.
Okay.
I don't like to actually make a fucking point and stand by it.
So go ahead, Alex. I guess you're on the spotlight first.
I will. I have, you know, I'm going to kind of run this like a debate.
Let's do it.
I will be the moderator.
Intro. No, so I do. I think that movies, kind of categorizing movies into genres, is very subjective anyways, right? And I think that...
I would agree.
And if you take elements of this movie in small parts, then yes, it could be considered maybe a horror movie, but the sum, or a horror comedy rather, but the sum of all of its parts, I feel like it definitely more falls into a fantasy movie. For
fantasy, all right, that's for, an angle that I wasn't expecting. I was expecting just pure comedy. All
no,
right.
No, no. I think it's, well, I think it's comedy and fantasy. I don't.
Okay.
I would not consider it to be,
like, you mean like where people lump in like the sci-fi fantasy. Like,
yes.
You stroll into your local fucking video store, yes, and that's just kind of lumped in there.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's where I would, first of all, that's where,
video.
That's
stores.
Where I would put it. I think.
What are those? You mean Redbox?
First, looking at the form, context, content, and context.
Yeah.
I think that the things like sound, it's not very spooky. It's more whimsical.
Right.
It's very iconic, but not spooky in and of itself. Let's look at, there are no deaths in this movie. And although a horror movie does not make itself a horror movie just because there are deaths, because there are horror movies that do not have deaths. Amityville Horror, Insidious, etc., etc. Nobody dies in this movie. No one comes close to dying in this movie.
That we see. Okay. Everybody's already dead.
Well, okay, and let's
the closest that we come to seeing anybody die is Lewis outside of the restaurant.
Right.
Yep.
And let's talk about the ghosts then.
Okay.
So they're obviously very present. They're the main source of the kind of fantasy element. They're not frightening, I don't find, in any way.
Okay.
With the exception of the...
Even when you watched it as a kid, you didn't think it was...
Not really.
I think that my biggest takeaway watching it this time was... Like, I do remember as a kid being spooked by some of them.
See, I did not.
But now it's just, like, it looks really dated as far as, like, the CGI goes. And it's not great.
So, and people don't call Ghostbusters because they find that the ghosts are dangerous, right?
Right, right.
They're more of like a menace, like a pest that you can eliminate, not with like an exorcism or a ritual, with like good old fashioned fucking
science,
science and ingenuity. Yeah. So there's that I feel like it's not particularly scary. And then also the rating. Because there are no deaths, it's just rated PG.
Yeah, but PG didn't mean shit.
I know, I know. The 80s don't really count.
You could watch boobs in PG movies back in those days.
Yeah, I mean, an R-rated movie then is a PG movie now.
Right. And I think now it would be rated PG purely because of the language also.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then I think that horror comedies are usually smaller budget films, whereas this was pretty large budget with all of the special effects.
Yeah.
And then, lastly, I feel like horror movies generally have sort of relatively less known actors.
Okay.
Whereas at the time, at least Dan Aykroyd and, well, all three of them, and pretty much all of the cast was very famous.
Okay.
I would kind of more categorize this movie somewhere in the same lines of, like, Men in Black or, like, The Labyrinth. There's monsters.
I can see those comparisons.
There's like there's monsters. There's like horror, you know, kind of scary elements, but I would not consider them to be a horror movie.
Okay. All right.
Maybe like Hocus Pocus.
I can see it lumped in there with Men in Black. I'll give you that. Okay. I'll concede that point.
And also, just to further my point, IMDb, Wikipedia, and Rotten Tomatoes all do not list it as a horror movie.
As a matter of fact, I will argue that point right now before Palmer goes into his reason as to why it is.
I'm diving off the deep end.
All right.
Okay.
According to Wikipedia, this does fall into the category of horror comedy.
The one that I read, they classified it as an American comedy.
It is an American comedy, but it's also tagged in the horror comedy and American horror comedy movies lists.
False. Fake news.
Maybe Palmer edited Wikipedia today prior to me double checking.
Yes, I'm going to log into my Wikipedia account and let me just change this and this.
The synopsis of it on Wikipedia does list it only as a comedy movie, but it does show up in the horror comedy lists or comedy horror lists. It
shows in a bunch of horror comedy lists.
Fake news. No, it's in tons of top rated like horror comedies you should watch.
Yes.
So absolutely. You're not the only person. Right. But yes, please go on.
So Alex's opening statements. Palmer?
My argument is divided into 5 points.
Okay.
5 points. Okay. But all of these points have multiple mini points within those points.
Okay.
Remember, these are just your opening statements.
Yeah, this is just your opening statement. I have much more to talk.
Oh, well, no, like, I want to hear your whole argument.
It's a debate.
No, it's a debate.
It's a debate.
We're debating.
Okay. All right. So, I'm going to point out five things. It's references. One of the most... the largest things, I think, that you can look at is the time period that this movie came out.
Okay.
Right? So, I'll go into more depth about it in a little bit, since this is just in opening statements, I guess.
You have 3 minutes.
But, yeah, it's references. It's important to know that horror movies and horror comedies both come and go with trends in horror. You can see that in the 80s with Poltergeist being released in 1982 and the prominence of slasher films emerging. You had Friday the 13th in 1980. People stopped going to supernatural horror movies and started migrating towards slashers. Mm-hmm. And this was prime time for somebody to make fun of the supernatural movies that had come and dominated the late 70s into the early 80s. And this is why I think Ghostbusters was so successful at the time that it was, because everybody had gotten tired of them. You had the Amityville Horror in the late 70s. You had like all these other movies that were just focused on these hauntings and these supernatural events, occurrences, that this one was like a grounded, hey, these men are like based in science. They can exterminate these pests that we've been dealing with in pop culture for the last decade. Mm. And I think there's a lot of tie-ins to stuff like Shaun of the Dead and even the Tucker and Dale.
Right.
In the way that they tackle tropes that have grown tiresome at the times that they were released.
Okay.
So I think there's parallels there.
Okay.
There's lots of Lovecraftian imagery.
Yes, I did read that article.
All over the fucking place. Yeah, I will come out and say not all of these are coming from me. Some of this stuff is...
We do our research. It's okay.
Yeah.
You have to research for a debate.
Well, it was written by a guy named Adam Bertocci, who wrote a fantastic fucking article about why this is a horror film.
It was good.
It was really, really good. So there's lots of Lovecraftian stuff in there. The Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is the ultimate tongue-in-cheek reference to horror.
Okay.
And that one's more coming from me than it is this article.
That sounds like a you thing.
And then my final point, a good horror comedy has to be a perfect blend of horror and comedy. So this movie doesn't sacrifice its horror elements to make jokes, because towards the end of the film, it does start to get spooky. You get a giant kind of culmination of demons, the undead, the supernatural, all thrown into one lump sum.
Okay.
And I think it's interesting watching the entirety of New York City's reaction to all of this stuff, because nobody starts to run away until the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man starts to appear, you know? New Yorkers are just like, oh, it's
a skyscraper-sized thing starts walking around, I'd fucking run away too.
There's lasers coming out of the building.
New Yorkers are like, oh, a demon dog's attacking somebody in front of a nice restaurant? No big deal. We're all going to go back to eating. But the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man appears at exactly 112.5 feet tall. I researched that.
Oh, there we go.
And all of a sudden, everybody runs for the fucking hills, okay. Which I also think, it, like I said, is a tongue-in-cheek reference to horror.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my 5 points. Okay. I am going to definitely go into in-depth in all of those as we go through.
Which one do you want to talk about?
So let's talk about... you know, as a horror comedy and the way that they subvert the tropes and everything to kind of bring it around that way. Most horror comedies are typically parodies or, you know, black comedies or spoofing, you know, it's source material.
Mm-hmm.
And my problem with this is a lot of the time, while I see that what they were trying to do and that oftentimes they were trying to do that, I feel like the way Bill Murray's character was written was so over the top.
Yes.
That you forget that they're trying to spoof
his
anything.
His character wasn't written that way. Bill Murray ad-libbed like 80%
of the time. Let me rephrase it. That Bill Murray was so over the top.
They should have honed him in then.
So in my mind, you lose a lot of that kind of spookiness that's going around.
It's like the Bill Murray show.
As you mentioned, really, it's the third act where most of the ghost
But wouldn't you say that about Shaun of the Dead? And
no, because Shaun of the Dead, the zombies are in the movie the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's no tension there. He's walking. He literally, like, there's no tension. He gets out of a car and fucking bashes everybody casually with a fucking cricket bat.
What about the people that tried to break into their house?
It's not really a question of tension, though, in that point, because they're, like, in Shaun of the Dead, the zombies are pretty present at the immediate start of the second act, whereas with this, the ghosts are kind of a side story until the third act.
That's not true. They're present from the very opening scene.
No, but as the antagonist in the movie, like, the antagonist in the movie isn't really the ghosts.
It's Zool.
It's not really even Zool up until the third act.
Well, I guess it's Gozer.
It's not Gozer either. It's the first two acts is based around the government.
Yeah.
And like the EPA guy, Mr. Peck.
No, he doesn't appear until after they've captured too many ghosts for them to hold.
He appeared after the ghost catching montage.
He's literally like in the movie for like maybe 15 minutes in total.
Do you know that people, excuse me,
Dickless is literally in the movie for 15 minutes out of the entire run.
Do you know that people hated his character so much that people just started being dicks to him like on the street?
It's like, I mean, he's like a dick in every movie he's
in. It's like what happened with King Joffrey.
Yes.
The actor can't find shit anymore.
Fuck you.
So I guess going into this point, though, is with Bill Murray ad-libbing so much and kind of stealing so much of the
show, they all did, though. Like, a lot of that script was not written.
Right, but Bill
Murray specifically. Like, so there's that horror trailer of this movie where they recut it to make it look like an actual horror movie.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah. Which is pretty good.
Bill Murray has one line
in it.
Is it
Neato?
Sure.
Bill Murray has one line in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of the scenes that Bill Murray steals get cut right before he's supposed to say anything.
Absolutely. Right.
So would you have tried to rein him in some?
Yep.
Absolutely not. Because I think in the case, like, once again, pointing to Shaun of the Dead, I think Bill Murray has a lot of parallels to, what's his name? Ed.
Nick Frost.
Nick Frost's character. In the sense that he exists to throw out one-liners and make light of the situation. And he does so every single time.
I think that Bill Murray's comedy makes it distracting to the horror elements of the movie.
And that's kind of where I was going.
You don't think it does when Ed's like, get me a Cornetto?
It's
post-hangover?
It's so kind of extreme. It's a lot of Bill Murray.
And I like it as the movie that it is. I love it. Don't get me wrong. I immensely enjoy Bill Murray's character.
My favorite moments are Bill Murray moments.
Yeah, but I think that Bill Murray makes this less of a horror comedy and more just a straight-up comedy with fantasy elements.
So, that's what I'm trying to get to.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think there's a bunch of other stuff. But I feel like the script and the references that exist throughout the entirety of the film.
Like which ones?
So, initially in the script, so there's a lot of references to The Exorcist.
Yes.
In this film. And some of them aren't quite as apparent as others. For instance, the initial text on Venkman's door was supposed to say, Peter Venkman sucks cocks in hell.
That's right.
Which was obviously a direct reference to The Exorcist.
Yeah.
They had to change that around to just burn in hell. But, I mean, there's more than just that. You've got, as soon as Sigourney Weaver's character gets possessed, she has the levitation scene, her voice changes, all of that stuff.
When her voice did change and she was talking, that I definitely got some Exorcist vibes from
straight up Exorcist vibes.
No, Dana. Only so.
But it makes a lot of references to other horror films as well. You've got a Shining reference, the tricycle in Lewis Tully's hallway after the party, after everything's been destroyed. There's just a random red tricycle just sitting in the fucking hallway.
Somebody also brought a dog.
There's even parallels to Poltergeist. Like I said, that it came out 2 years earlier. You've got a spirit emerging from an appliance.
Yep.
Not just any spirit, a powerful spirit that changes the course of... While in Poltergeist, it changes the course of just a town. In this movie, it changes the course of a whole city. I think that really can't really be ignored. And while the whole thing's presented in a zany manner, I will concede that point. The film is ultimately a humorous examination of horror tropes, especially the ones that preceded this film in terms of all the stuff that came out in the late 70s and the early 80s before the supernatural fad died out. And I think blow for blow, especially when you consider director Ivan Reitman's history of making and producing horror movies and horror comedies in specific. He did Cannibal Girls, and he did a he had a massive stint with Cronenberg doing Rabid and Shivers. Yeah. That's how he got his start. So it's not like the man doesn't have his ideas about what makes a horror movie and how to make a horror comedy.
IMDb.
He made a whole bunch. Well, not a whole bunch, but he has made a very successful one in particular, Cannibal Girls. If you guys haven't seen that, absolutely watch it. It's fantastic. And then he got, you know, he learned from one of the best, body horror people in the biz, you know? So, like, that's what kind of shot him into the spotlight. And I think if you look at that, you can't really ignore those facts. Yes, it's grounded in comedy, but it's making fun blow by blow of the paranormal films that came before it.
Okay.
All right.
Alex.
Yes.
How would you ignore those facts?
Well, first I would stick my hands in my ears. And then I would start singing. No, you make some very good points, but I do not agree.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You. I can see where you're coming from, but I, like I said, I do not agree.
Well, I mean, I can go deeper into those points.
It's Alex's turn in the debate.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like also the locations where it takes place. I feel like horror movies mostly have kind of like spooky locations or things that look kind of ominous, and this one does not.
Have you been to New York in the 80s?
Right. But it has like a bougie hotel.
The subway itself in the 80s.
A fancy New York library, a freaking high-rise apartment. None of these places scream scary
initially,
or horror to me.
Initially, they don't.
Initially.
But they eventually do.
But initially.
It takes is some science and everything gets weird.
And that's the thing. I don't really find there's no feeling of dread in this movie. This film is fucking optimistic. Optimistic movie.
But that comes from the Lovecraftian side of this of this whole thing.
Okay. But in this one, you don't really have to fear the dead people. You just kind of call your quirky scientists and they'll come and kill him with their lasers. Well, Sam, come on. What fucking... You say something. I'm not good at... I was not on debate team.
All right. So, kind of going back to what I was saying about the horror elements. Well, they are there.
Yes.
You can't deny that there are a lot of those elements present throughout the entire film. They seem to take a back seat to a bunch of side stories that, up until kind of the culmination with Zool, kind of makes them irrelevant.
But would you say that that culmination was the moment that the spirits are released from their storage facility is the peak of the movie in terms it's the climax. It's the climax of the film. Yeah. Fact that the climax is supernaturally based alone supports my fucking theory.
What about Men in Black?
Yeah, that's
not supernaturally based.
Yes,
it's aliens.
That's supernatural.
That's not supernatural. That's fucking aliens.
It's fantasy then. Fantasy, alien, sci-fi.
I would have said sci-fi.
Yeah. That movie has monsters and there's the culmination of them trying to take over the world.
It's aliens trying to take over the world versus the undead.
But they don't treat these people like the undead, though.
They're treated like pets.
No, hold on. The aliens in A Quiet Place were fucking aliens. That was a horror movie. So aliens can automatically, you're saying like the difference between aliens and supernatural, they're both technically horror elements.
I'm saying, taking context, yes, A Quiet Place was a horror film featuring aliens. There are plenty of horror films that feature aliens. So you can't immediately dismiss the alien factor, I guess, if you want to go that angle.
Right.
But
Sigourney Weaver would have something to fucking say about that, too.
Right. Well, yeah, you're right.
No Sigourney, only Zool. Right.
Well, I'd only say that for the first one. The other ones are action movies.
Right.
Yes, but the first one.
The first one is definitely a horror film.
So that's actually where I'm going to kind of... That's where I'm going to kind of jump this one a little bit. I view the themes in the second Ghostbusters as more horror-related than the first one. because the entire movie is based around A, snatching a child, and B, Vigo.
You know, the labyrinth. Creepy. They snatch a child. Would you consider that a horror movie?
No, because
there's monsters.
There are monsters, and the supernatural. But again, it's a much more lighthearted, kind of upbeat, optimistic
movie. They made Ghostbusters 2 more kid friendly. They took out the smoking.
And it doesn't.
They did. They took out all the fucking. There's a lot of goddamn smoking.
Strangely enough, it doesn't play that way.
I know, but they did.
Yeah.
I just don't, like, I don't know. I don't see it. I think that there are horror elements to this movie, and
to dismiss this would be to dismiss the plethora of supernatural fucking comedies that came out after this. You had Scrooged, you had Beetlejuice, you had fucking High Spirits. All of these movies came out in the late 80s.
None of which I would consider horror comedies.
Would you consider Scrooged a horror comedy?
Or Beetlejuice?
I would consider Scrooged, well, I consider Charles Dickens' original fucking take on Scrooge,
right,
a Christmas horror story.
Right, but I'm talking about the movie Scrooge.
Scrooged is a play on that, is a horror comedy version of Charles
Dickens.
Oh my god,
so apparently Palmer just thinks every fucking movie with a ghost
is
horror
Beetlejuice?
Comedy.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
So are you viewing Beetlejuice as a horror comedy?
Do I think Yeah, absolutely. Do you not?
No, I don't. And I think
that's it's a creepy fucking
just
movie.
Just because it's creepy, though, doesn't mean it's a horror movie.
So I think part of it
there's a difference between a horror film and a horror comedy.
I realize that.
I think part of it me is that I never identified the subject matter as particularly creepy.
Yeah.
But I think that's the point behind this.
I think it was because, like, I found the actors in the movie to be so funny that I couldn't see anything past just the comedy aspects of it. Like, I do appreciate that there are definite horror elements in all of them.
Uh-huh.
But, like, Michael Keaton in Ghostbusters was fucking brilliant portrayal. Or not Ghostbusters, sorry, Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Bill Murray in this steals the fucking show time and time again throughout the entire movie, even in the creepy scenes. The creepiest scene in this movie, in my opinion, was just Sigourney Weaver in a fucking chair.
Yeah.
When the fucking claws come out and rip her away.
The taxi cab scene, I think, is the creepiest scene for me.
For me, there's no death, and I feel like that's a big thing for me.
You're surrounded by death in this movie.
Who died?
Everybody that's fucking part of the fucking...
Besides the ghost, though, no one else died. Well, it can be assumed. I feel like Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, tons of people fucking died.
Yeah, but that's because it's playing on the slasher tropes.
Slasher, yes.
And I think that's a big thing right
there.
I
miss the death.
For me,
so because there's a lack of death and gore, you don't consider it a
horror
comedy.
Not even necessarily gore, but some death, yeah. There needs to be someone needs to die.
What about something like Scary Movie?
That's not a horror comedy.
You wouldn't consider a movie that is literally making fun of a fucking generation of films
a
horror comedy?
I feel like that's just a satire. That's just like a satirical movie.
Isn't that what a horror comedy is?
I don't know.
Isn't it a satire?
I guess.
It's a parody, but there still has to be an emotional attachment. Or like an emotional investment.
Horror comedies.
There's no emotional investment in this for you?
Not from a horror perspective.
No. Why not?
Because... nobody.
You don't
died.
Care about Sigourney Weaver's
no,
character.
I do.
You
but
don't
no,
care about the Keymaster.
I do care about the Keymaster.
I don't care about the Keymaster.
He's
key
so
master.
Adorable.
He just wants to be friends with everybody.
He really does. And he wears his
so pants. There's an emotional attachment to this.
But at no point are any of them in risk.
Yes, and I think that's
no
what
point
it is. There's no
any of them
danger
at, risk.
At all.
So because there's
no
a lack
danger.
Of, but I think they are in danger. It's just the Ghostbusters save the day.
But you
the second fucking Stay Puffed appears, suddenly the whole goddamn city is in danger.
Yeah, but you never...
It's just because it's a statistics versus personal shit.
The last
the
5 minutes of the movie.
The massacre happens, it's a statistic. If one person dies, it's a goddamn tragedy.
The last 5 minutes of the movie aren't gonna deem it a horror comedy, though.
But I think those are the moments that it is. That's from the second that the spirits leave the fucking vessel that they're stored in, because the EPA comes... Mr. Dickless comes in and demands that it's shut down. That's when it becomes a horror comedy the most.
I don't know. I feel like it's kind of like watching an episode of Power Rangers. Like, you knew every single time that the Power Rangers were going to win and that no one was in any real
danger.
So
because
danger.
They have an arsenal and because they've upped
because
that
ante. Because of science, yeah.
You don't feel like, okay, I actually have a fucking specific
okay,
point
all right,
against
let's
that.
Let's fucking hear this.
All right.
But I do want to talk about some other parts of the movie besides if it's a horror comedy or not.
Okay.
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 Like hashtag 1984 is me too.
Yeah.
hashtag. You guys are going to argue for that. I'm actually going to say that this film portrays a whole bunch of different types of females all over the place, and that this is actually a pretty female-centric film.
All right. Oh yeah, I think Sigourney Weaver has a very well thought out character.
Well, and fucking Gozer. Mm-hmm. And
Gozer's not a she.
The secretary.
Yeah, Gozer is whatever they want.
She is very portrayed as a female once in her appearance.
But once.
She
Gozer
can take
be-
whatever appearance she wants, but she chose to take the appearances of a female.
The first time. The second time she took the appearance of Ziggy Stardust.
That's so true.
The female version of Ziggy Stardust. You're right.
Ziggy Stardust had no gender. Thank you.
She doesn't.
Right?
Androgyny.
David Bowie.
Hashtag, did you just assume Gozer's gender?
So, I would actually say that the whole element of science plays into the Lovecraftian stuff. All right. So, all the Lovecraft books have this element of a protagonist that is grounded in science. They're very rational. They're these people that are going to stare at something in the face that is very blatantly supernatural and say, there's no possible way that you can exist, or there's no reason for your existence. That's something that occurs in Lovecraftian stuff throughout, you know, over and over and over again. Or the protagonist gets so deep in research, they come across something that they're incapable of understanding. Mm-hmm. So this happens because of the fact that Zool and Gozer are both established mm-hmm. in literature throughout the course of the movie. Mm-hmm. They keep doing their research and they're like, oh, you know, these are old gods essentially that have been prayed to, and they're it's similar to something like Cthulhu or Shoggoth or Dagon or something like that. Also, you've got the imagery of triangles, which
Illuminati,
which predominantly occurred in another film we talked about a long time ago,
yes, The Void,
which is also very Lovecraftian.
Yes.
And triangles are considered a very fucking evil symbol across the board, which is why everybody considers the Illuminati to be fucking evil and questions pyramids and all sorts of
and
other
Beyonce.
Shit. Yes, and Beyonce. Fucking Beyonce. She's at the center of all of this, I'm telling you.
She sent out a tweet. She's like, I am not in the Illuminati.
But the imagery of triangles is something that a lot of horror films explore. And then you've got the concept of knowledge beyond power. So Gozer is established in lore. We've got the line that I'm terrified beyond rational thought.
Right.
And it's a direct confirmation of this whole like Lovecraftian concept, because they're Lovecraftian protagonists. They're meant to be rational people, and in the face of the irrational, their heightened terror conforms to the standards of all the Lovecraftian ethos.
Oh my god, say Lovecraftian one more fucking time.
What other word do you want me to use?
No, I'm just fucking
And this is where we pull in the Stay Puft fucking Marshmallow Man, who is the ultimate tongue-in-cheek reference to terror in general, right? They say, Gozer says, choose the form of your fucking destructor. That's what she says. Not verbatim, but that's what she says.
That's what they said.
And Gozer is essentially saying, hey, make your inner turmoils a reality so I can feast on them, right? Right. And regardless of whether or not they want to, it's involuntary, right? The only thing that appears in Dan Aykroyd's mind is a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. This, for some reason, terrifies him on some subconscious level.
No, it doesn't terrify him. He was thinking of the one thing that could never harm him.
But it terrifies him that it's there.
Once it's 127 feet tall.
I think on some subconscious level.
He's subconsciously afraid of the Stay Puft Marshmallow
Man. I mean, he tries to give an explanation as to why he was thinking of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
And I think it's important to note that the crowd at the bottom goes from unafraid and cheering and watching. They stand through rubble falling from a fucking, like, the plasma blast that they're releasing from their proton packs.
Yeah.
Falling onto the crowd. They don't move because of that. All of a sudden, a fucking 112 feet goddamn being appears, and all of a sudden, they're running for the fucking hills. This is the thing that tilts New York City.
Is this because the Macy's Day Parade?
Because of the fact that that it's supposed to be a film that says, hey, well, yeah, kind of. Yeah. This is supposed to be a film that says, hey, the supernatural no longer scares anybody.
Right.
Because we've seen it too many times. This is something that New York literally considers a pest. They get confronted with a ghost at this point in time, and they're like, yo, let's get some exterminators over here to take care of it.
It's
like
just
they
like
do
getting,
rats.
Like rats, yeah.
And I think that's the point. I think that's the ultimate analysis of... And it's the biggest point that I have to drive home as to why this is a horror comedy.
Okay.
Because of the fact that people had been overexposed to this genre of film. This genre... Or this film mocks it so openly and so willingly that it is playing off these tropes successfully. And in doing so, it becomes a horror comedy. It just because it doesn't have... overt tension. Like, I was never tense at all during Shaun of the Dead. I was never tense at all during fucking Tucker and Dale.
No.
Like, there was those murder. Movies, there's no... Yes, there's gore and there's violence, but I don't... there's no tension. And I don't think there's any tension in any horror comedy. Zombieland? There's no fucking tension.
There is a tension of danger to the characters in the movie. Mm-hmm. In those films.
And I guess that... That doesn't really seem
to exist in Ghostbusters.
Mm. How is there no tension of danger? They could all die. They're literally on the top of... I was more scared about them getting pushed up when she says, "They're not... Are you gods?" And she's like, "Then die." And she fucking shoots... She turns into the Emperor from Star Wars and shoots him with lightning.
So again, you're talking about the closing sequence, which is, what, 20 minutes of an hour and 50-minute movie?
But that's the culmination of every horror film. Because the peak doesn't occur until in Shaun of the Dead until what's-his-face... or until they're all in the bar, which is the last 20 fucking minutes of the movie. The peak of of Tucker and Dale doesn't occur until they're all fucking in the house and they're afraid of Chad.
But they're still trying to survive... Deathly encounters during the entire...
Are you telling me that these people that are exterminators that are going in with their proton packs that are facing something that are entirely supernatural aren't trying to survive something?
All right, so here's...
Not really. He's eating hot dogs.
Here's where I'm going to get you.
And how are the biggest Tucker and Dale ever trying to survive anything?
The Ghostbusters?
If anything, they're just fucking running away while these kids are trying to survive something.
That's a different type of horror comedy.
So...
Okay! So now we're subdividing the genre!
So hold on. The biggest danger to the people in New York City prior to the climax of this movie are the Ghostbusters themselves walking around with nuclear bombs strapped to their fucking backs.
That they did not test. And don't touch
the children. Ghosts that they're catching are nothing more than a nuisance. One of them's stacking books in a library.
One eats hot dogs.
One eats hot dogs and fucking leftover room service. Like, none of them are actually causing any...
I'm sorry, the taxi cab driver that was very clearly undead crashes into a light pole. We don't know what happened to that guy. He wasn't wearing his fucking seatbelt.
You don't know that.
The cab driver?
I do know that, because he just gets into the fucking car and says, "I want to go here," and the cab driver just slams into a light pole.
But that's, again, that's after the climax. But so I'm saying, like, pre that moment.
Uh-huh.
Nobody's in any actual danger throughout the whole movie.
So you're saying because the first... two-thirds of the film there's no danger or tension. But there is, because they can't explain what's going on with Dana's character, with Sigourney Weaver's character. They can't explain it.
Gozer was just hungry. He was cooking eggs on a countertop.
And
eating fridge salami.
No. You open your fucking
fridge. There's a lot of junk food in here.
You open your fucking fridge. It's literally the one thing they can't explain. The one person that fucking Bill Murray cares about.
You know why Bill Murray can't explain it? Bill Murray doesn't care about explaining what's going on in her fridge. Bill Murray's the bigger threat to Dana in the first two-thirds of the movie than any fucking fridge ghost is.
Yeah.
I don't think so, because he tries to win her over.
All right. So have we talked about if this is a horror comedy or not?
Who do you think has won this debate? You're the moderator, Sam.
I am the moderator. There are absolutely horror elements to this movie.
Uh-huh.
I still maintain that it is much more comedy.
Bias bullshit. No.
Why is it fucking bias?
Bias bullshit. It's much more comedy than horror.
Because I didn't convince him. It's bias bullshit.
In my defense, he did start on my side.
But I shifted more towards your side after watching it and doing a shit ton of research. Because there is a lot of spooky supernatural stuff attached to this movie, including the fact that Dan Aykroyd's real family is super into fucking like
paranormal
stuff.
Yep.
So there certainly is a lot of that really can't be denied, but this movie is...
Also, this was a much different film when Dan Aykroyd
presented it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This was
the original... I read pieces of it, not the entirety.
With Belushi and...
They were supposed to be wizard time-traveling
wizards. In the future.
And it was too costly to make, and then Belushi died.
The first scene was in a flying car.
Yeah. So I'm definitely still stuck in the middle ground. If it's a debate. If it's a horror comedy, it's barely a horror comedy.
Okay. I'll secede to that.
I'll take barely over not at all.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. Like it's the elements are there.
Yeah.
It's still way more comedy than horror.
All right. Fans of the podcast,
yeah,
write in and let us know.
Yeah, tell us who won this debate, because I'm apparently not doing a good job of deciding it for you guys.
You're the worst moderator.
No, my heart wants to say it's a comedy.
Yeah.
But
that's what my heart feels.
Yeah. And because even watching it this time with the expectation of, like, we're going to figure out how if this is actually a horror comedy.
Right.
Or comedy horror, whatever the fuck you want to call it.
Yep.
I still couldn't bring myself to do it.
But the Lovecraftian element.
But the Lovecraftian. The Lovecraftian, Craftian love, Lovecraftian.
You know what I can talk about is how Dr. Peter Venkman is a fucking sexual predator.
Without a doubt.
That motherfucker.
We don't ever see him drug anybody, though. Aside from fucking Dana's character, who is literally fucking floating in midair.
He gives her enough drugs to kill 8 women.
Because she's possessed!
Why does he have it in the first place?
Because he's a psychologist.
Psychologists don't carry around Thor's.
Psychologists don't get drug prescriptions.
Well, what I'm saying is you don't know why he's carrying it. Maybe
he's
used that for himself.
Because he's a fucking raper.
Where did he get it?
I don't know.
It's an antipsychotic.
But you never, ever see him use it.
But he said,
ever.
He gave her 300 cc's.
He falls
of Thorazine.
Head over heels in love with this girl. All he's trying to do is win her over.
He stalks
Not enough
her.
Of a reason to stalk her at her place of business. To
stalk
go
her at her home.
And make sexual jokes when
but
she
he
says
has business reasons for doing
that.
So.
He is blackmailing her with that. The only reason
that he's blackmailing
he's
her,
he's like,
with?
If you come on a date, then I'll tell you more about your case.
Instead of telling her when he ran into her,
no, he
stalking
hands
her, at work.
Her the information. She literally reads it in the courtyard, and then she agrees to going
like,
out.
We can
with
talk
him.
About more of it,
but she
on
never looks
date.
Like she's threatened by this at all. At
I don't know
any
when she's
point.
Trying to when she's trying to kick him out of when he first shows up to her house.
Yes, I will.
She absolutely wants him to leave.
Oh yeah, 100%.
That's just my bedroom. 100%. Nothing goes on
and
there.
She said,
oh, what a crime!
He says, "I'm madly in love with you." All right,
but
stalker. Summer style.
He doesn't bang Dana when Dana's possessed, even though Zul fucking throws Dana's body at him.
Yeah, yeah. If anything, it shows that his intentions are pure with him, or with her.
He just drugs her.
Because she's fucking possessed!
Why does he have...
Alright, what about the opening sequence?
Yes.
He's electrocuting the guy that actually is showing signs of ESP.
See, I consider that more pure comedy. And no, he only shows it once. He guesses the squiggly lines one time.
No, one time.
Yeah, he does. Still.
She got it zero times.
She was never even...
Because he's flirting with her.
She was never even close.
Yes, I will admit
And then
that
he
that
gets
is,
upset
that
when...
That is predatory, I will admit.
And he gets upset when Ray barges in talking about everything right in the middle of him
again,
trying to put the moves on
But
her.
To be fair, she was responding to it. She was the one that suggested,
Victim
hey,
blamer.
Let's meet... Let's,
at 8.
No, she said 8 o'clock.
That's just what I thought you were going to say.
He's creepy.
I will admit that scene was predatory,
and it's
but she seemed to be responding just fine to
it's
it.
It's also of the time. I will, like, back
and
in
so
the day,
that's a lot of it.
Like, even like Revenge of the Nerds, like,
yeah,
at that.
No, Revenge of the Nerds is all about literally revenge porn.
Yeah, but like now everyone's like, ooh, weird. But like back then, like, oh, it's so funny.
Yeah,
I don't know.
So I know you like to make a big point of take a look at like the time the movie was made.
Mm-hmm.
And while a lot of, you know, the paranormal stuff mm-hmm. was, you know, the late 70s and kind of fizzling out before this movie came in, this movie was made, what, released like 5 months before Reagan was elected? Thereabouts.
When did it come out? What month?
84.
Mid-84.
No, July.
Like
of
summer
84.
Of
84?
Yeah. Then,
yeah. The same day that Gremlins was released, they went back to get back head to head.
So
I also consider a horror comedy.
People die in that movie.
Get the fuck out of here.
I'm pointing at Alex right there because she just won a point in the debate for that one. The debate that's over.
Several people die in that movie.
There are literally thousands
she won several
of dead
points.
People in this movie.
They were already dead.
You're already fucking dead.
That doesn't count.
They could have died in their sleep with beautiful
things. How do you know that the people from Gremlins aren't the ones that are haunting the people?
Shaun of the Dead counts.
In this movie?
Shaun of the Dead counts because people die in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you guys consider. That's the defining point.
No,
somebody has to die.
No, that's just one of
It's the point of the fucking innate tension in the movie that exists throughout the film that doesn't exist in this. Nobody's ever at risk in this movie except for the people, the women around Bill Murray, the people involved with Dickless from the EPA.
Yep.
And apparently the constituents that vote for this shithole fucking mayor.
Yeah, right. That mayor sucks.
Who only fucking lets the Ghostbusters do their job when they not so subtly remind him of the fact that an election's coming up.
You're going to win a lot of votes.
Aside from that, nobody's really in danger until a giant skyscraper-sized marshmallow man.
How tall did you say he was?
112.5 feet.
So I'm curious, if somebody did get stepped on him, because when we see him explode, it's just, you know, marshmallow goo.
Yeah.
And it just kind of coats everything.
Shaving cream.
Yeah, shaving cream.
Well, some scenes it does look like proper marshmallow fluff, and then other scenes it is straight up like, shaving, yeah. shaving
cream. So I am curious, if he did step on somebody, would they get crushed, or would they just kind of get, like, stuck inside of him?
I imagine.
Could you eat your way out?
Could you imagine somebody just inside his foot trying to eat his way? I never thought of this. See, these are things I don't think about.
I
overanalyze the shit out of everything.
But I that's imagine not it getting like getting swallowed in a corn silo.
So you would die of suffocation.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I guess so. It'd be, unless you were Homer Simpson, then you successfully tunnel your way through.
You could give it a for fucking effort, like Farva on... or no, not Farva.
Chugging the maple syrup.
No, in Beer Fest. Farva's character in Beer Fest.
I forget what his name was.
Landfill.
Das Boot.
Just
you just gotta get past the air bubble.
You know what I never understood about that movie? When they were at Beer Fest the first time, why no one just looked at what other people were doing?
Plot holes.
Yeah.
Who thought about plot holes? But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Going back to looking at when it was made, I just don't know how you can dismiss everything that came before it and not understand it's just playing off all those tropes.
No, I mean, it is.
Just
there's
like
a lot
every
of
successful horror comedy.
It is, and there's a lot of that, but... If you're looking at the time it was made, the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man showing up as the fucking, like, end boss is...
the raid boss.
Like, he
more
shows
nuts,
up...
More nuts!
He shows up as a representation of, like, the materialistic culture.
He's
of
capitalism.
He's the materialistic culture of the, peak 80s time.
Absolutely.
It's not Godzilla showing up.
Nope.
It's not fucking, you know, the weird god thing from the end of Cabin in the Woods.
I think it's something that still is relevant in this day, though. Like, if anything, it's more relevant now than it was back in the 80s.
And I think that's why this movie stands up so well, is because a lot of these issues are still issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the whole conversation about, you know, regulatory issues. Mm-hmm. We hear about that all the time right now.
Well, you're talking about Reagan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how he was liked it just a couple months after this movie came out. Apparently, his fucking staff loved this film or
something?
Yeah,
because this is a pretty transparently political movie.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely a lot of bureaucracy in it.
Well, it takes place in 1980s New York, which is at the time, like, the epicenter of entrepreneurship, right? And then the main characters are failed academics, so they're poking fun at, like...
Liberal ideologies,
and instead they decide to go into business for themselves. You know, take out a loan, pull themselves up by their own
bootstraps. With their third mortgage.
Do you guys realize that that's like blow for blow, like a fucking the plot line of The Exorcist?
No, I don't remember that.
So
can we just talk about one other thing?
I don't know. That's just there's too many parallels for me doing
no Exorcist.
I'm in too deep.
And I think that's part of what makes this movie so great, though,
yeah,
is that all of these things do exist within this one movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are these parallels to The Exorcist and all of your paranormal shit that you,
which is why it's a horror comedy.
Which is why it's a horror comedy.
You just tell
them
it's a horror comedy. So
I told you I was leaning your way.
You're right, Palmer. It's a horror comedy.
I'm going to say a comedy horror.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the special effects?
Actually, I have a lot on that too.
Great.
Alex looks like she's about to punch me.
Before we do that, can we talk real quick? Did either one of you ever drink the high C ecto cooler shit? growing up. Do you remember that?
My mom wouldn't buy that
after this movie came out.
I don't think so. No.
So
I was too busy chugging Surge.
See, this is what I had in lieu of Surge.
What was it called?
Hi-C made like the you remember like the powdered ones?
Yeah.
Where you could just like mix it with some water and whatever.
Yeah.
They made a Ghostbusters branded one, which was the Ecto Cooler, and it was neon fucking green.
I was gonna say, was it neon green? If it was any other color but neon green,
and
it'd be a fucking travesty.
It was it came in the same form as like Tang, but instead of being orange, it was neon green. And I drank fucking crates of those goddamn things.
Yeah. It's not what the astronauts drank.
No, they drank Tang.
They drank Tang.
Not Ecto Cooler.
If you guys want to jump into the cinematography and special effects.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
First off, this movie was nominated for an Oscar.
It was.
For its visual effects.
But it lost out.
It did. It was beat out. But
not by Gremlins.
But it was Indiana Jones, right?
Yep, it was. Yeah. It was Indy. But at one point, this film was cutting edge, and watching it with and I've said this back on our very first episode when we watched the It comparisons.
Okay.
And I said dim graphics though over and over again. That was literally what came out of my mouth every time fucking any ghost appeared on the screen in this film was just dim graphics though.
Yeah, dude, I love my Sega Genesis.
But, so there was a $5 million budget, right?
Yeah, this was a massive budget. A massive budget. Which is after a number
crazy of... Crazy to think that was a massive budget.
Well, I guess it's true.
I mean,
30 million, yeah.
30 plus years ago.
Yeah.
And the whole movie only cost $30 million.
Yeah.
Only.
But it was interesting. I mean, they rounded up an A team. It wasn't just like, hey, let's throw a bunch of actors at this film that everybody's familiar with. They had... The fucking cinematographer was somebody very prominent. The director was somebody very prominent. Everybody, like, involved with this film, producers to actors, were A-list.
Yeah.
Like, this was something unheard of for a movie like this up until this point. I think that's one of the reasons it's so special.
Yeah.
Is because of the talent that was involved. From every aspect of this is the reason that in spite of the fact that like even though the visual effects don't hold up, even though a lot of stuff, for instance, the rapey perspective of fucking Bill Murray's character, you can overlook a lot of that shit and it's still a great movie.
It's still fucking hilarious.
It's hilarious.
Which is why I think the remake is so soulless.
I never saw it. And I didn't. It's
a soulless misrepresentation of what the original two films came for.
I didn't not see the remake because of, you know,
the controversy.
I didn't see it because I felt like this was one of those movie franchises that just should have been left well enough alone.
Well, no, when they announced the remake and they announced the actresses behind it,
and like I love the actresses that were in the remake. I was on board.
Yeah. I was one of the people that was like,
"Fuck yeah,
I'm ready for this." Yeah. Like, this sounds really good. And it has its moments. Like, I'm not going to totally dismiss it. There are some moments where the group of ladies managed to capture some of, especially the comedy.
Yeah.
The comedy aspects of the original film.
Did they leave out your Lovecraftian elements?
No, those Lovecraftian elements are very much there, you fucking dick.
I love you so much.
but there's a bunch of other things that are just missing from this. Like the remake seemed like a cash grab, whereas this seemed like a genuine idea. Mm-hmm. And especially when you look at when it was released versus when the remake was done, you know, you didn't have that oversaturation of ghost films. You didn't have the public perspective moving towards one genre of horror into another subgenre of horror. The slasher craze hadn't taken over, you know. And you know, another thing to point out that's interesting is it wasn't until a few years after the release of this movie that the slasher craze started getting into the supernatural.
Yeah,
because all the original Friday the 13th movies, Jason's just a normal flesh and blood human being. Granted, he can take a lot of brutality.
Right.
You didn't get the Halloween stuff. Yeah, Halloween 2, you had fucking what's his name? Michael Myers' eyes shot out.
Right.
But so he could take a lot of punishment, but there wasn't a lot of supernatural stuff hinted at up until later in the 80s when they started getting more and more into zombie Jason and Freddy Krueger started.
When they needed to start resurrecting characters because they realized there was still money to be made.
Well, no, it was all because of Freddy Krueger getting released 6 months after the release of this film that suddenly blended supernatural elements with slasher elements, and that created a whole new fucking genre of horror.
Okay.
So I think it's just something about the time and the comments that this movie made about politics, about the people of New York, about the era that the remake is missing. Mm-hmm. There's none of that commentary. It's just like, hey, like this is just trying to be a remake or a reboot of something that a lot of people have nostalgia for.
So it's like falls
flat on its face.
So it's like the remake of RoboCop. We take it out of like 80s Detroit and it loses all of it.
It loses all of it.
Yeah.
So did most people have the same feeling about the movie?
It's sitting at like 50% on
fucking... Okay, because I know people were upset about it before it came out. I wasn't sure how the reaction was to it after people had seen it. Well, yeah,
and I mean, like, I really did try to go into it liking it.
Right.
And it wasn't... I swear to God it had nothing... It was nothing to do with the chauvinistic fucking...
No.
...bullshit of it being, oh, well, you're just throwing in a whole bunch of women into the film. It had nothing to do with that. It just wasn't... It was heartless.
Yeah. that's a really fair...
And that's
assessment.
All I can say...
would that one be a horror comedy, or would it just be a comedy, or would
it's
it just
a heartless movie?
A
heartless
movie. It's a soulless piece of
which is fine. Yeah, you
know, soulless piece of fucking
it's one of
garbage. Garbage.
It's one of those, like, I love the actresses that are in the movie. I've never seen it.
Yeah, I'm sure I love all the actors. Yeah,
I'm sure I'll watch it by accident at some point. It'll be on TV.
When it's on TV, I'll watch it.
It'll be on TV, and I think it was on TV the other day.
Was it?
I think so.
Was it on Stars?
Maybe.
I show it on Stars all the fucking time.
Yeah,
Do you have Stars?
I think that's what it was.
Oh, I don't
I have it as like part of my DirecTV package.
Yeah, and I think that's what it was, and I saw it, and I was just like, not today. But there will come a day where I'll probably sit down and watch it, and I'm sure I'll walk away feeling completely mediocre.
It's a decent. I'll come watch it with you.
All right.
It's a decent popcorn movie, but it's nothing more than that.
But it's nothing more than that.
Whereas this one is like, you can sit down and watch it, and like, you get transported to a place and time.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you guys want to talk about favorite scenes?
Yeah, sure. I'll lead off with it.
Yeah, please.
I gotta say there's two of them.
Okay.
And the dickless scene is probably the highlight for me.
Okay.
And you were talking about how Bill Murray has a knack for stealing scenes. This is definitely one of them.
Yeah.
And the fact that I learned, and I didn't know this up until doing research on it earlier this week, that line was totally fucking ad-libbed. None of that shit was in the script.
No.
And it just flows so fucking perfectly. In the height of all this tension, the Ghostbusters are arrested. They're in jail. They're fucking facing a lot of charges, right? New York City is getting ready to be in shambles. Everybody's being terrorized. And Bill Murray is just like this dickless piece of shit over here. and it just stands out as like one of the highlights of the film. And that's where I will concede that Bill Murray has a knack for stealing scenes.
Yeah.
Which is a high compliment to him.
Yeah. And then the other scene has to do with Sigourney Weaver meeting up with help me out, what's his name, Rick Moranis' character for the first time, and she tilts him.
He's such a little guy.
It's a shame he retired from acting.
It is. He has good reasons, though.
He does have good reasons, but I fucking love Rick Moranis.
But the fact that he bent over, you know, she's this absolutely, and you know, I think watching this, right? So you guys, I think we had talked at some point on another cast that I had a massive crush on Sigourney Weaver at one point in time.
I did too,
and it's because of this fucking movie.
Okay,
she is so stunning to me in this film.
She absolutely is.
She's so stunning, and like we had talked about, I think we had talked about you and I, Alex and I, about how I was attracted to her in Aliens, or an alien rather,
alien.
And she had this, but she was tomboyish and alien, whereas she represented this like forward facing silhouette of femininity in Alien. Whereas in this, she's just stunning. She's every scene she's in, she just captures the screen.
Right.
And so the fact that she goes from absolutely just stunning woman to this domineering fucking keymaster.
That's the reason.
Or gatekeeper.
Gatekeeper, yeah. Right,
that just like bends Rick Moranis over and just goes for the full on passionate kiss. That is one of my favorite scenes in this film because it's just, it's the total opposite of what you'd expect from an 80s movie.
Yeah.
So you've got the predatory fucking Bill Murray, and then all of a sudden she is in charge. The one in charge. Absolutely. Yeah, it's fantastic. Those are my two favorite scenes.
She's such a well written character.
Yeah,
she really is. When she's sitting with legs crossed in the new enhanced view of the skyline of New York because her fucking apartment has a massive hole.
Oh, what happened?
It reminds me so much of Scarface.
Yeah. What about you guys?
Yeah.
So, kind of carrying on the Sigourney Weaver thing.
All right, guys.
No, like
she's beautiful.
I've always loved her because of just like the powerful female character she portrays.
Yeah, she is.
And so, kind of like playing off the whole somewhat rapey Peter Venkman character after she's possessed, and he's there, and she's take me subhuman. But my two favorite parts of this movie are probably when they first go into the like firehouse.
Okay.
And
I think bulwark.
Yeah, that scene right there, like that's happening. Ray's so excited after being so downtrodden on having to take out a third mortgage. Egon's talking about how the place should be fucking condemned.
Yep.
And Ray is just going like nuts about this fucking fire pole and losing his mind. He's like, "This is great. We should take it. We could sleep here tonight and clean it up."
Yeah.
Fucking love that scene.
So adorable.
You go from negotiating to suddenly not having a fucking leg to stand on.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll take it.
My other favorite one, I guess, is right after he calls William Atherton dickless. Mm-hmm. When they're talking about the end of days and how it's biblical. And you know, they're all going through your typical Bible fare, you know, 40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes, the dead rising from the grave, and here comes Bill Murray to steal the scene again. Dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. Like Those two scenes get me every time, and then the weird little quips and one-liners just from these guys, because they're all A-list comedians.
They absolutely are.
A lot,
and like, they're
in the height of their prime.
Yeah.
I know.
Post-SNL,
yeah.
Just mm-hmm. like...
Egon explains his hobbies as molds, spores, and fungus or something like that. And it's just so, like, nonchalant.
She wants him so bad.
She wants him
so bad.
When she puts the suit on, when she puts Spangler's suit on Lewis, I think that's in the second movie.
Yeah, it's in the second movie.
But, like, it bleeds over into that film, and just she's so gung-ho for him, and he's just so nonchalantly, like, oblivious.
Yep.
Because all he worries about is mold, spores, and fungus.
I mean, I get it.
What about you, Alex?
So I love the opening scene with the librarian. Uh-oh. I think that is such a wonderful scene. I love that there's no credits, too, especially for an 80s movie. I feel like that's a little bit different. I love that she's just kind of like shelving books. And there's like all of a sudden books flying behind her that she doesn't notice. And like those
lots of
the library cards.
Lots of parallels to Poltergeist.
Just let me have my goddamn embedded moment.
Embedded right in that.
Fuck. Palmer's making a triangle with his hands now, by the way.
It's emanating from my wrists.
I love that scene. And then I really love all of the scenes that take place in that bougie-ass hotel. But my favorite is not when they're in the ballroom, which is hilarious, but when they're upstairs.
Oh.
On the 12th floor.
Yeah.
And they just go up there with their packs, and people are like...
They never used these before. No. That's causing more damage. It'll cost $5,000 and then an additional $3,000 for the storage or whatever.
He's an angry little slut, isn't he?
I just love seeing slime like eat shit off the room service tray, and Bill Murray just gets slimed all over. And I just feel like there's so many good quips in that part. I just
he can hear you, right?
That's right. He's an ugly little spud, isn't he? But I feel like those are pretty much anything that takes place in the hotel, and pretty much anything that takes place in the library are favorite scenes of mine. I think they're also just really good like locations. I don't know if this is true or not, because I know that even though the movie takes place in New York, a lot of it wasn't actually filmed there,
right?
But I think that the library and that's not true, because the hotel was in California. I was gonna say that these are all actually New York locations. No. But they're not.
No.
I think the library was, though.
The restaurant was, too.
Yeah, the restaurant was. If I remember correctly, the library was as well, but I think those were two of the only ones. A lot of the New York stuff is actually hand-painted shots. All the aerial shots are hand-painted.
Well, and the hotel was the Biltmore in Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
Is that not right?
Oh, maybe. I can't remember.
I think that's an actual hotel.
My head is just too fucking saturated with Lovecraftian nonsense right now. But I want to point out some interesting things about the cinematography in this film.
Oh, yeah, please do.
Which is pretty unique. The movie's unbelievably purple from start to finish.
It is.
There's a lot of techniques that are used during the filming. It's shot intentionally not to look like a comedy. The director was looking for more of a dramatic pose, I guess, in all of this. So a shot with a different aspect ratio, and there were UV lenses used on even the night shots, which I think is interesting, which gave it the purple tint. There's a lot of focus drawn out for the dramatized shots, lots of wide shots. For instance, there's a lot of aerial depictions of the city. Get the fire station that they're in, you know, all as it's exploding through the, especially towards the end, as the spirits are exploding out towards the sky. But there's more than just that. I mean, almost all the shots of Sigourney Weaver's apartment building are all done as aerial shots that are hand painted. It has a lot of light, playing with light, throughout the film, and I think it enhances certain aspects of it, and it bounces between comedic brights and atmospheric and supernatural highlight shots, depending on what's going on. You got a lot of the characters painted in darkness, and you get their silhouettes and like enhanced light going on from behind them, and then you've even got action light shots that almost are reminiscent of stuff that we wouldn't see until much later, as a standard for the action sequences. For instance, what's going on in the ballroom, you've got three different sources of light going on with what's going on in the ballroom, and that did not become a standard until Die Hard.
You mean the best movie ever made? Oh my
God. Die Hard pioneered that as a standard.
Really?
And it became the action movie standard, but this was kind of creating it before it was that. You had lots of lens flare, interesting fucking playing, I guess, just playing around with light sources, and a lot of that just had to do with, once again, that triple A team that they had brought on from start to finish. That about wraps it up for what I've got to point out.
So the special effects guy, Richard, was it Edlund?
Yeah, Edlund.
So he worked on Star Wars 4, 5, and 6, right? And isn't it funny that he also worked on Indiana Jones?
Yeah.
Which
he was in bed with Lucas.
Right? But didn't Indiana Jones end up beating this movie for...
It did, yeah.
Yeah.
It did.
Fucking ironic.
Dick.
And then they shot a lot of...
But he put a lot of love in this film.
He really did.
He actually said that he believed that this should have won over Indy.
Right. And I read that they did a lot of the optical effects on 65mm, so that when they shrunk it down to 35, it would be kind of gnarly and
Be destroyed. They did that intentionally.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's just nuts, like how they played with a lot of aspects of this film. And it's stuff that we take for granted these days, especially now, considering like...
Everything's digital.
My immediate reaction is like, oh, them graphics though. But
I got that filter on my computer, man.
I can do that with Adobe After Effects. Exactly.
For the time, that's amazing.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just a testament, I guess, to A, how far we've come, and B, the amount of love that was put into 80s movies before this was readily available for everybody to access.
No, I think it does look a little bit dated, but you can tell the love that went into it. So it doesn't fucking matter, you know what I mean?
And even with it being dated, like, the comedy still holds up.
Oh, absolutely.
The thematic elements still hold up, even the Lovecraftian ones.
Even the Lovecraftian ones.
Like, it all holds up.
I regret bringing that up so much.
I mean, you could have brought it up once and then abbreviated it or something, but you said Lovecraftian 9 times in 2 sentences.
Because there's no other way to describe it.
No.
I really do consider this one to be not only like a super iconic film, but one of those films that you can watch over and over.
It's been a while since I had seen it.
Me too. It's been like 5 years.
Yeah.
Well, and I forgot when I said we were going to cover this one, you guys, both of you seemed reluctant, and now that we're talking about it, you guys seem like you enjoyed it.
Well, no, I mean, I love the
movie. Did we have this conversation via text?
Maybe.
Okay, Sam, don't always have my best foot forward.
And like for me, like I love this movie. I always have. I was probably reluctant from the horror comedy standpoint.
Okay.
But I do love this movie. And, you know, having not seen it in at least a couple of years.
Yeah.
And sitting down and watching the whole thing, like,
it's great.
I forgot how much fun this movie is.
Yeah, I'm glad that we did it.
I'm glad we analyzed this one as part of this month, because I don't know where else we'd squeeze it in.
Yeah.
I also get worried sometimes when we apparently have conversations about the movies that we're going to watch in the future, and then I don't fucking remember.
It's the early onset of Alzheimer's.
That's what this feels like. I'm like, what is my brain doing? I don't remember.
Blame it on Zool.
There is no brain, only Zool. I thought we were watching Chud.
No. Next week, we're going to do our first fan.
Oh, that's right.
Fan suggestion. Suggested film.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, you know, anytime we announce what our theme is going to be for whatever month it is that we're covering, please feel free to give us suggestions. We'll take them into account. And this is the first time we've gotten one, so we're gonna
right. But if we think it's stupid, then we'll tell you.
Yeah. Well, no, we'll tell you to fuck off. Why not?
I feel like if they don't know that about us by now.
Yeah, that's true.
So, if you don't know me by now, then you'll never.
If you don't
never know me.
But now.
Do you guys have anything else for this one?
No,
it's about that.
I think Sammy does.
I don't. I just want to know, out of 5 300-milligram doses of Thorazine.
I would give this one 5 out of 5 300-milligram. Yeah? Because this is 100% rewatchable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But is that the only basis of a movie, is that it's rewatchable?
No, but I think a lot of it... I don't know. There's the atmosphere, the characters. I think there's so much of this film that's timeless, to the point where this is just anytime somebody puts this on, I'm going to be mesmerized by this perfect movie every time it's on. Like, this may not be the film that I immediately reach for, right, but if I catch it on TV,
you're watching it.
I'm watching it.
I did scroll past Ghostbusters on TV the other night to see if it was this one, but it wasn't. It's the remake. I was like, not watching it right now.
What about you, Sammy? How many milligrams of Thorazine?
I'm going to give it 4.25.
Okay.
4.25?
Okay. Because there's a part of me just based... Again, I haven't seen really either one of these in a really long time, but in my head, I still remember liking the second one better, even though I feel like it had more flaws.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
But yeah, 4.25. I might bump it up, you know, give or take. So somewhere between 4 and 4.5.
Okay.
What I'm going to give it a 4.
Four? All right.
A solid 4.
The retroactive Me Too movement knocked off a little bit.
I also just don't... You know.
I don't remember it being that rapey up until like the last few years.
And honestly, that's not even...
I think it's more just because we're much more conscious. Yeah. Well, no, just conscious of that kind of stuff these days.
We're adults now.
Well, I think it... You know, I think a lot of social aspects have brought that up as well. And
yeah. But that's also not the only reason I'm giving it a 4.
Also, you mentioned Die Hard. William Atherton is in that one as well. Also a dickhead.
Also a dickhead.
That's true. You're right.
So what's our aggregate score?
Our aggregate score, so 4.166666666.
Mark of the Zool.
I'm noticing a lot of trends with our scores. There's a lot of 666666666666.
There is no score.
So I'm going to round that up to an even 4.2. 4.2. How about that?
4.4 Zool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's our final statements on
absolutely,
all this stuff. All
absolutely.
Right. So now for the housekeeping.
Housekeeping.
Next episode.
To keep up with all the latest Terror Incognito information, you can follow the cast on its official accounts on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Terror Incognito. Sorry we haven't done a lot of social media stuff this week. I've been super busy. But we did get to some stuff today for the first time in like 2 days. I don't know. We try. We get to it when we can.
I think our
that was all Alex.
I think our Throwback Thursday post was dope.
Yeah, it was pretty dope, actually. I got to give you props on that. That was a good one.
That's one of my faves.
I'm just going to start assigning that to you for now.
That's fine.
She's our Twitter master.
Your reward for doing a good job is always having to do it.
You guys, I have been sneaking by doing literally the bare minimum for this podcast. Everyone else has a job but me.
I have a job.
So we're still...
You're the now slave.
Yeah, you're the nice slave.
Oh, yeah.
I did the logo.
Yeah, that's true. I guess. You did work like 6 months ago.
And then again, like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Fuck you guys. Yeah.
So we're still transitioning our domain name. That's more work for me, I guess. So now you can reach us at email cast@terrorincognito.com. You can also follow us individually. You can follow me, Palmer, at Sturmsworth.
I'm Alex at A. Looters.
And Sam at Sam Heeds.
Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Spotify. If you dig the cast, please give us a subscription. It helps us more than you know. And honestly, I'm sick of fucking begging. Just fucking subscribe already, goddammit.
Love us.
Hey, no, wait a minute.
What?
I begged on for Twitter last week, and I almost doubled up.
Yeah.
So keep begging, because apparently it worked.
Why don't you like us? Palmer's just going to harass you like Bill Murray until
Palmer's just going to start hurling
personal tweets at people.
He's just going to start tweeting Lovecraftian over and over.
Over and over and again. I'm just going to fit it into a sentence as many times as I possibly can.
And that's why he's not in charge of social media anymore.
Because I'm on the verge of a meltdown.
Is it a Lovecraftian meltdown?
Absolutely.
All right, perfect.
I'd be disappointed if it wasn't.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. As always, we'll be back next week with more terrifying antics.
Keep it creepy.
Take care, everybody. We'll catch you later.
Bye. Thank you.